Hey, folks, welcome to a lesson I taught to my team called High Performance Achievement. Once a week around our company, we do a staff meeting, and often in staff meeting, I will break out and teach for a few minutes on some kind of a success principle. After running my very first full-length marathon, I started realizing that some of the processes I used to accomplish that big physical goal were success principles that I'd used in my life for years. And they've got great overlay in parenting, in your spiritual walk, in your business life, certainly in your financial life. And there's some processes that you use to be a high-performance achiever in these things. So I was sharing this with my team. They recorded it, thought it'd be a great idea for you to hear it. And so that's what you're listening to. If it sounds a little weird, it's because it's just me talking to my team of a couple hundred people. And that's the audience that's sitting there, the people that work for me, that have been on my team anywhere from one day all the way up to 15 years. And that's who's sitting there laughing at my jokes, hearing this process. But the big thing I want you to get out of this is listen for the cues, listen for the core outline, so that you realize that all of this marathon talk that we're doing here, all of this talk about running, has an overlay, has implications in many, many areas of your life. Enjoy High Performance Achievement. The Bible says in Hebrews, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but later on it yields a harvest of righteousness. And so, you know, as I started kind of unpacking this whole experience of preparing and executing something of this extreme, 6,500 people signed up, only 4,700 finished the race on the full marathon. That, you know, that's huge right there. To get up and go finish is absolutely incredible. And I started going, okay, what are the elements that I applied out of my life that do apply in our marriages from a spiritual perspective, that do apply in raising our kids from a spiritual perspective, that do apply in our careers, in what you do here, in what we do as an organization? What are the elements that have brought us to where this organization is right now that are overlaid in this situation? And I started going, okay, there were some things my training over the years, training myself in success principles, what are those things that I just, because I've done it for so long and so many different components of my life, what are those things that I did to be able to run a marathon at 46 years old and complete it in 5 hours and 17 minutes? What was it that I went through? And I started unpacking high performance achievement. I want you to take this overlay from a spiritual walk and say, I'm going to take this high performance achievement, these principles, these processes. When you go home and you're dealing with your relationships, when you're dealing with leadership in your church and your community, when you're doing these things, what are the takeaways from an experience like this? The first thing I did with this that I've done many times in my life, but I really want to encourage some of you to do it, but I took this at a little different angle than I've taken it before. We talk around here about setting a goal, living your life in such a way that you go accomplish what it was God put you here to do. So we hold things like this, you know? You know, the idea of goal setting is not new. The thing I want to talk about is, you know, in the book Good to Great, the predecessor to the book Good to Great called Built to Last. Many of you read Good to Great, phenomenal study on how companies go from good to great. What are the components of that? Well, Jim Collins wrote a book, Built to Last, before that, and how he studied companies that were built to last, organizations that were built to last. In that book, he says to establish a BHAG, B-H-A-G, a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that's the difference, and that's one of the takeaways for high performance achievement. Not just achievement, but high performance achievement requires that you not only set a goal, but you set a goal that is intimidating. It's reachable. You can barely see the edge of it to believe it's reachable. Barely. To where you know you're only going to get there if two things happen. One is you execute, and two is God shows up. You've got to execute, and God has to show up, or we're not getting there. That's an intimidating goal. Now, if it's so intimidating that it's just bizarre, and it's vague, you know, or whatever, then it's not a real goal, okay? It's not something that we really think is going to happen. I'm not talking about my, you know, my 15-year-old when he is six saying I want to be president of the United States. That's not, you know, is that possible? Well, somebody's going to be when he's an adult, so technically it's possible. Is it probable? No, it's not probable. Now, if he's gone through some processes, he's, you know, been elected to a few things politically, he starts to see, you know, this is reachable. You know, it's a Herculean effort to become the president of the United States. Now, that's an intimidating goal for anyone. Okay, but it's different for a six-year-old. So don't be the six-year-old that's just, you know, being grandiose. That's dreaming. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm saying, hey, you know, I've run 5 miles. I might could do 26. I talked to some people who say, yeah, if you've been running five pretty steady, if you got on a plan, it's hard though, Dave. Everybody I talked to. I've never talked to a marathoner that said, no big deal. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. You don't have to, if you just do it a little bit, you'll be okay. I've never talked to anybody that said that. They all said, you got to do the deal. I mean, you're going to have to work up to it. It's doable, but you got to execute. And I'd add to that, in every component of our life, God has to show up. Now, once you've done that, you say, okay, here's the barely on my tiptoes, can't quite reach it, but if I learn to jump, intimidating goal. I might get there, barely. Once you've done that, then you got to start down here, and you have to build a ladder, a step-by-step-by-step-by-step ladder. How am I going to get there? And that's breaking every sub-goal into details. You know, one of the things Tim sent me and Bruce sent me, too, as soon as I said I think I'm going to do this, they started sending me emails of websites with marathon schedules and charts. There's the one I worked through, your training schedule, okay? And you know, the first 18 weeks out, you run 3 miles, 3 miles, 3 miles, rest, and run 6 miles. I was already doing that. Only three? I can do that. Okay, that's week one to train for a 26-mile run, 18 weeks out. So that's like I did that in December to be ready for an April run, okay? You know, fast forward about a couple of weeks down, the 22nd of January was 3 miles, 5 miles, 3 miles, and on Saturday a 10-mile run. But, you know, we're working up to that. Little bitty steps, step by step by step by step by step. Break it down. Break it down. I put in there, I thought, well, I've never been in one of these races. There might be stuff of showing up. There might be different emotions or things. You got to park. You got to think. It's different than just getting up and running down your street. So I better get in some races. So I ran a 5K. With my son Daniel, and we went down and ran the little 3.2-mile thing, and that put that in with my training. I fit it in. I said, okay, that's my run that fits this part of the chart, that little 5K was, and I got the experience of putting a little chip on your shoe so it times you, and, you know, you have to go through check-in. You put the, you know, you pin the thing on your shirt, and, you know, there's a whole different, you know, there's a little different things. There's a little bit of excitement. You're around there with a bunch of other people. It was February. We're all freezing to death, and, you know, but then you're running, and you go, okay, wow, there's... And you finish, and you got a time. And it was a different thing than running down the bike trail, you know. And then I put in there a couple of half marathons. So I ran a half at the Tom King and ran that in 2:02. And then I went down to Knoxville and ran another half 2 weeks later and ran that in 1:54. I'm thinking, just like Sharon said, just like, you know, I just ran a half marathon. Maybe I can do a whole, you know. But when I started, it was a concept. By the time I had climbed a ways up the ladder towards the barely reachable thing, don't miss, this is just a matter, this is not me bragging about me racing. Some of you are going, not getting this, okay? This is about your life. It's about I'm getting ready to celebrate 25 years of marriage. This is how you do that, okay? You set these things and you walk up these steps on purpose, intentionally, Rick Warren would say. See, what happens is we don't live our lives on purpose. And so we don't go search out what the plan is that God's got for our life. We don't embrace that and step into it with this intimidating thing where you have to become passionate, you have to become enthusiastic enough to systematically climb this ladder and build a whole process in. And you know, I've got notes and scratches, and every time I did something a little different or I was on the road and couldn't meet one, I had to come back and pick it up and, you know, and make sure I'm hitting all these training things. Didn't hit the training exactly perfect, but still, I mean, I'm like Sharon said, or one of y'all said, the first time I ran 9 miles, I was like, I came in, I told Sharon, I was exhausted. I laid on the floor like I was going to die. My wife called me a whiner, you know, just like I was talking about. You know, she was not merciful. She's like, well, I've run a half, and there you are running 9 miles. You act like you're dying. Get up, you know. So she motivates me by ticking me off, you know. So, you know, I ran, but then I got up, you know, and then I ran 10 miles and I ran 11 miles. The same thing. I'm laying in the floor going, I'm going to die. Who else can? And then I ran 13 miles one day and I went, ooh, I just did a half. Wow. I can, when this half race comes up, I'll be able to do this half. Man, I can do this. And then I ran 15 and then 17 and then 20. And you know, and I'm going, I ran 20 miles. I could have driven to Knoxville and back in the same period of time it took me to run 20 miles. But I, you know, it's unbelievable. And you, but you have those little things where they're confidence builders, aren't they? You know, I've been married 5 years. You know, my kid is functioning. You know, it's a milestone. You know, the coach comes up to you and says, you got a good kid. The teacher says, hey, your kid's okay. These are marks. You know, in your spiritual walk, in your physical life, in your career. So, but you don't know that's happening if you're wandering. High achievement requires the intimidating goal and building the intermediate goals to get there. It does not occur on accident in any area of your life. There's not an accident in this process. It's not a perfect ladder. You're going to go up and down a little bit. I mean, some of us, we ran, and Tim and I would talk about it. He comes down for prayer before the show every time, and we'd be talking about it. And he goes, yeah, I ran, but man, my knee, I don't know if I'm going to do this, my knee. And we talk about our little injuries, and oh, we're whining. The people at prayer are going, y'all are a bunch of wimps. But, I mean, we were hurting because you'd run, and your knee would go, and then you have to heal up a little bit, and then you'd come back and do different things. And you know, the day I ran 20, I ran 19.4 miles without stopping. And man, somewhere around there, my knee went, ugh. And I walked like Festus out the back half of the, you know, that 6 mile, that last 0.6. And, you know, the weird thing was I had 20 miles, but 0.6 was a failure of that. Not just a touch over a half mile from home. And I limped in, and I felt like I didn't do it. And that shook my confidence. What, was I really going to be able to do 26 if I couldn't do that? You know, and all this stuff starts messing with. Does it work that way in life? That's how it works. If you're going to do this high achievement stuff, the other thing you're going to do is you're going to read and research what the experts have to say and also what the people who have done it before have to say. So I read tons of articles, different people. Daniel Tardy has done these things. Bruce sent me, all you, Chad, all these people would send me different, here's a link and read this. And here, you know, I'd read nutrition. I'd read about injury. I'd read about blisters. I would read about, you know, what are the barriers. And, you know, the cool thing about marathoning is usually the people writing the articles, probably 90% of them are written by people who actually run. In a lot of businesses, the experts are idiots. You know, they've never actually done it. They've got an opinion. You know, and certainly in the financial world we're in, that's what we run into a lot. A lot of opinions and no performance. And so these guys really had done it. Tim and I were actually talking about that while we were running. We were laughing because we were running too fast. We ran together coming out, and you know, we burned the first 5 miles in like 9-minute, 15-second miles. We're cruising, which is way too fast a pace. But we couldn't stop ourselves. We were just jacked. You know, we were just going. We kept going. We got to slow down. We got to slow down. And then we'd look up and we'd run it 15 seconds faster the next mile. We're going, we got to slow down. And Tim's going, yeah, well, the experts know. Because he'd been reading the same articles, right? You know, well, they know you're supposed to slow down. Don't blow out your everything in the first thing. And I knew this stuff, but we weren't killing it, but we were running too fast. We should have been running 10-minute miles, and there's a lot of difference in a 10-minute mile and a 9-minute, 15-second mile when you're doing 26 of them. A lot of difference. So, but we could feel it. You know, he's going, I think we need to back off. We need to back off. Finally, mile five, he goes, look, you're crazy. I'm leaving. And he just backed, and I just kept going, which was stupid. But should have listened to my younger friend. But, you know, the other thing is, how many of you read those things that did this stuff, or in any area of your life you had this happen? You read what the experts say, and they talk about here's the problems, here's the barriers, here's why it can't be done. You know, in the marathon, they talk about the 20-minute or the 20-mile mark. At 20 miles, your brain quits working, your body quits working, your spirit gives up. All this crap just shuts down at 20 miles. And there's all these articles about the 20-mile bunk, you know, the 20-mile problem, the 20-mile problem, the 20-mile problem. And if you're not careful, man, it psychs you out. I wonder how many people just quit at the 20-mile because they read all this stuff. And so I had to like do the reverse. I was like, you know, okay, I prep for it. I've got the nutrition. I'm doing the stuff as I go along. I'm getting the salt. I'm getting the protein. I'm doing all the things you have to do to not have that happen to you physically. So after that, it's a decision to not quit at 20 miles and not let all these negative influences, because you will read stuff that tells you you can't do it. Hello? All the experts in radio say we can't do what Bill Hampton, his team, and I have done. It's impossible to be one of the top five talk radio shows in America and be independently owned and do it out of Nashville, Tennessee. That's impossible. Interesting. Interesting. And all the radio people have told us for years it couldn't be done. All the articles, everything. It's just there's no possible way. And they'll give you all the reasons it can't be done. And if you don't watch, you'll get that in the research too. So avoid the negatives. Take them as warnings and things to be wise in that process. But as you're doing your research and your plan and you're laying out your game plan, in this case it was nutrition and pacing and all these other things to not cause this to knock you down in the 20th mile. But whatever it is, wherever you're getting towards the, you know, the 75%, 80% of your goal, that's not when you quit. That's the difference in high performance achievement and just achievement. Achievement's good, but there's a difference in high performance achievement, which is what we're talking about today. Here's a big one. If you're going to do the intimidating goal that only you can reach if you just go all out, if you go bananas, if you're going to go just beyond your reach, you better decide as you sit down and lay out your ladder and you're doing your research and your reading, you've got to decide if you're going to have high performance achievement, what you're willing to give up to hit high performance achievement. Because you're going to give something up. Something's going to move. There's only so many hours in a day. You're going to lose something to get this. And you need to do that on purpose. In our case, we lost some sleep to get up and run in the mornings. We had some pain. We changed our diets. We didn't eat the same stuff. We didn't do the same things. I chose not to go out to eat or with somebody the night before that wanted to go out to eat before the race. No, I've worked 6 months for this. You think I'm going out to eat, hang out with you, and act like nothing's going on? There's something going on. You know, the process is that you're going to give something up. To get to where this organization is, lots of us in this room have given up some things. We've sacrificed some things. For the gospel to go forward across the earth, people sacrifice their lives. That's an extreme example, but what are you going to give up to do what it is that you're laying out here to do? Because you're going to give something up. You're not omnipresent. You're not sovereign. And you're not in charge of providence. You're going to give something up. You live in a logistic world that is limited by time and space. There's a limited amount of money. There's a limited amount of effort. There's a limited amount of energy. What are you going to give up to get to there? In order to get to more brand penetration and be known on primetime TV, I'm not willing to give up living in Nashville. So when we negotiated the deal with CBS for primetime contract, it included David and living in L.A. Not mad at the people that live in L.A., just not going to live there. Like Nashville. Period. Not willing to give that up. But if you make the decision, I'm willing to give that up to get to there, you need to do that consciously. Don't wake up one morning in L.A. all disillusioned because you hadn't thought through what you were giving up to hit your deal. That's what people do. They look at where I'm going, and they don't think about what it is I'm sacrificing to get there. So come up with what you're sacrificing, label it, and make that okay, or make the decision to not go there. Because, you know, we sacrificed, I mean, some of us did damage to our bodies to do these races. Some of us more than others. The next thing, if you're going to hit high performance achievement, you have to keep away from negative people. Sadly, sometimes they're your family. You ever go to Thanksgiving dinner? How many times do we hear people in FPU go, their family said, well, you never get out of debt. You're always going to have a car payment. You have to keep away from negative people. I am not hanging out with a bunch of trash mouth. You know? Don't hang out with a bunch of negative people. Get positive influences around you. And listen, let me tell you something else. When you get the positive influences around you, here's what you do. You tell them what you're doing. And they'll join your team. I came around the corner at 20, and I was hurting like crazy. And I was running not much faster than that right there, but I hadn't stopped yet, so I hadn't blown the mental thing. Okay, and Bruce is standing on the sidewalk. He had finished his half like 2 hours before, and he's not even sweating. And so, you know, he comes out. He goes, "You can do it! You can do it!" He walked. He was speed walking, maybe, but he was walking as fast as I was running. I promise. Okay, that's the truth, isn't it? He did do that. But I got to tell you, when I hit 20 right there, and I turned the corner, and I'm like, "Jason, you said that." I saw Bruce. I left my wife back at 18, and she was a cheerleader. She wasn't in the training part, but she was a huge support system. She showed up at 11, brought me stuff, you know, nutrition stuff I needed to you know, I had it all timed out in my plan. And so she was my pit crew. And then I saw her at 11. I saw her again at 18 because they were right together. You came back around. And then I turned that corner. Man, I'm dying at 20, and all those 20 articles are in my head. Okay, I got to get past that. I can't let that win. I can't let those negative things come in. And I turn the corner, and there's Bruce, and he steps off the sidewalk and starts running with me. And he ran from 20 to 21 with me and talked the whole time. He told me stories about things, and I have no idea what he said. but he, you know, no, I actually do. But, I mean, he was telling me all these things. But, he, you know, he's like, you know, General George Patton was an Olympian, and I said, "Patton was an Olympian? I had no idea." And he's like, "Yeah, and he had this great saying, something about your mind keeps working after your body quits." And I'm going, "Yeah, that was a while back." And but it was, you know, I mean, I have these sarcastic responses in my brain, right? But I'm also going, getting encouragement off this. I'm being fed, aren't I? It's like he came alongside me. He plugged a battery in right there. You know, I turned the corner at 17. Mariana come out, and she's like running. I'm like, "You are way too excited." She was cheering, and she knew somebody else that was right there beside me who had just blindingly passed me about that point, too. And by then, you just don't care. I mean, the ballerina woman had passed me by then, dressed in a tutu, you know, and I'm just like, true story, with polka dots. As I'm finishing the finish line, the polka dot ballerina tutu is in front of me, and I'm going, "This is proof you didn't really win, you just finished." These things go through your head, because, I mean, people with balloons on their heads are running faster than you, and I'm going, "Oh, my God, where does this come from, you know?" Isn't this how life works, though? You look up and you go, "The polka dot ballerina is in front of me." Doesn't this happen in your life?
There's Elvis.
Elvis is always in the race, yeah. You always see Elvis. So, I mean, you know, but Marianne and Marshall was at mile 18 right there at the bottom when I turned the corner, and at 11, too. He was fairly close to Sharon, about a block away. They didn't know each other were there, but he was down there cheering everybody on. And, you know, I mean, it's amazing. There's tens of thousands of people lying in the street, but you see somebody you know who cares about you while you're trying to hit your goal. Put positive people around you. Tell them about your goal. Make them part of your team. Make them part of your cheerleading team, because they will speak positive things in your life. My charismatic brothers and sisters, the background I come from in my Christian walk, they talk about speaking things into people's lives. Sometimes they carry it a little bit far and it wigs me out. But I'll tell you what, there is a truth to that. If somebody says something to you positive, it's a lot different than somebody says something to you negative, isn't it? And you have no idea what you're speaking into somebody's life half the time when you speak. So be careful with that tongue of yours. Because you can slice somebody. You can slice a kid's goal right there in front of you. You watch their spirit wilt. I've done it, and you've done it too. And if it has that power, it has the same power to lift up. I'll tell you how powerful it is. A little comment will blow you away in this process. I'm running in the early stages in January, and I'm thinking, you know, if I can really start to see this ladder. I mean, I had that goal up there, but it wasn't solidified. It wasn't like I'm doing it. It was, I'm going to train, and if I can start feeling like I can do it, then I'm going to say I'm doing it. I'll at least do the half. I've never done a half. I'll at least do the half. That'll be an accomplishment. And I'm standing out there one day outside the studio getting ready to pray, and everybody's down there. And Daniel Tardy comes by, and we're talking about this stuff because he's trained for these kinds of things. And I'm saying, well, I'm thinking about doing the half, but I might do the whole. And he goes, I have never known Dave Ramsey to do half of anything. See what I mean? It's powerful. That's in my head. Over and over and over. I can't quit. I'm walking like Festus in that back half. I mean, that's 4 miles to go. I can't quit. I got to go look at Daniel. I quit. I made it all but 3 miles. Why would you want to tell that? You know, I can't even get there because I've told too many people. I'd be too embarrassed to quit. I'd crawl out of there. You know what I'm saying? Did that go through your mind? Yeah. I mean, everybody that did that. That, you know, but speak positive stuff. Have people around you speaking positive things into your life. That is, you know, it's so rare because it tears away. Speaking into somebody's life, boom, it turns them loose. It's good stuff. Walk through your plan over and over and over and over again in your mind. Lay the ladder out, and then what's the execution? What's it look like? Professional athletes, when they do sports psychology, talk about visualizing and visualizing and visualizing and visualizing and visualizing and visualizing and visualizing catching the ball. New Agers talk about this as if it's some kind of spiritual principle. Christians talk about it and say, where there is no vision, the people perish. Visualize catching the ball. Visualize what it's going to feel like to score the touchdown. Visualize what it's going to feel like to do that. What I did was I took, in every race I ran, the 5K, both half marathons, I took the marathon map, which you can print off of any race you're getting ready to do. And I went, I got in the car, and I drove every mile. And I go, okay, that's mile 3 of the run. You know, 4 is at Dallas, down Belmont. You know, 8's at Horton on Music Row. I don't even have to look. I got it memorized. Because I did it over and over and over in my mind. So I knew right where I was at all times. I could pop my watch, tell my times, look at my splits, know where I was going. Every step was planned and visualized. And when I was out running on the bike trail and I had run 3 miles, I go, okay, I'm right there at Belmont. I'm crossing right there by Belmont College. Okay. When I'm at mile 9, that's down the bottom by the gulch. I'm going to be right down in there where those clubs are. I'm going to know right where I am there. Okay. When I'm at 11, I'm crossing at Jefferson Street. And when I hit 11, when I did 11-mile run, I had that in my head over and over and over again. Visualize it. Play it out. Play the tapes over and over and over. You got to lay that stuff out in your brain, man. It's powerful. It's absolutely essential. And taste the emotion. When I ran the 20-mile training run, that's where I'm going to be, right there at the bridge, which is where I hit, where I saw Bruce right there as I came around. And I'm going to be right there. That's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be hurting, and I'm hurting right now. And your mind is, your body's going to shut down. Your mind's got to finish. And I tasted the emotion of that. And so I've got to play. I've got another hour to run at that point. And that's if I'm running 10-minute miles. I got 6 miles to go at 10-minute miles, which it took a lot longer to run that than an hour. But, you know, it didn't matter. It was going to finish. I taste it. I want to know what this feels like. That's how you hit high performance achievement. Lastly, when you hit the win, enjoy it. Celebrate. Too many people run the marathon and have blues the day after. Because, I mean, it's like we've been doing all this intense activity to get ready for something, and now there's nothing to do. I got to get something to do. You know, celebrate. Enjoy the process. And then do set you another goal. And then do set you another goal. Because I don't want to put back on 35 pounds. I'll pass. I'm feeling a lot better. I got the heart of a 32-year-old. That's what the doctor said when they checked me the other day. My hearing, because of radio, is the hearing of an 84-year-old. But I got the heart of a 32-year-old. So, you know, it's good. It's good. So I'm not going to give that up. I'm not going to run another hole. I ran 2, my first and my last. But and I promised myself that a lot during that race. I will never do this crap again.
Iron Man.
Yes. No, I'm not going to be Iron Man in it. That's right. But, you know, I did enjoy the halves, and I'm going to do a lot of halves. I got a friend I've met this weekend that runs halves all the time, and I've enjoyed the 2 halves. They didn't kill me like the whole did. And so, boom, I'm going to be back. You know, that's an example, though. Do the same thing in your deal. I'm enjoying this process, so here's the parts of it I'm going to take away. I'm going to reset some goals and function in my newfound level of achievement, rather than regressing back down to where I was before I knew I could do this. Now that you know you can do this, you ought to be able to do this. See, I'm convinced the reason I could run a marathon at 46 years old, and the reason that it really mentally was something I could easily do, in terms of the prep for it and everything and laying these things out. I did these things and I didn't even realize I was doing all of them. But when I look back on it, it's, this is such an intense experience. There has to be some overlay for all of our team. And I think there is. And so when I laid all that out, it's like, this is how I live my life. So once you, you know, it's like I tell people, once you made $100,000 a year, you'll go make $100,000 a year again. And some of you are going, what? You know, and I tell people all the time, when you make $1 million, when you, you know, everybody, you ever heard the old saying, maybe the second million is easier? Well, it is easier. And it's not because you got $1 million. It's because you've done it before. Once I had run the half, I knew I could run the half. And you know, and now all you're thinking about, now it's not a question of finishing, it's a question of time. And you can, once you've been there, you can do it. And the only barrier then was your brain. It wasn't your God. Your God was big enough. It was your perception. But once you've been there, you know that perception's real. And it's changed permanently. So once you've made $1 million, even if you go broke, I did it. I was 26 and I was stupid through half of it. So I can probably do this again. And I can do it smart this time where I get to keep it. There's a plan. And, you know, but it wasn't a question of if I could do it anymore. It was just a question of how long, what my time was going to be. You know? And I was with, at a wedding on Saturday night. I went to a wedding after I ran this thing. And she's, see, I told my wife, I said, look, this is a truckload of gold. I'm making a deposit into our marriage. Watch. Cha-ching, okay? I'm going to a wedding with you like this. So, valet parking, please, you know, right? So we go to this wedding, and I ran into Brother Hardwick, my old pastor, who's a good friend of mine, and he's just gotten remarried at 72 years old. And I came up to him. I was joking to him and Carol, his wife. I said, so how's married life, Brother Hardwick? And he said, Dave, I was married for 55 years. There ain't no shocks. He said, I already knew how married life was. He had a great marriage for 55 years. So guess what? He'll probably have a great marriage. Been there, done that. Got the T-shirt. It's different than, you know, getting married the first time. You're going, are we really going to do this? Are we going to be a statistic? Are we going to make it? You know, are our children going to be okay? You know, all these kinds of things. Been there, done that. Can do it again. Your expectations are permanently changed once you hit it. So now when you are reaching up, you're not standing here to reach up and barely. You're standing there to reach up and barely. And that's when entire organizations are built. That's when entire communities are affected. That's when you become really a high-performance achiever at a different level because you're standing on your past performance now and you have a different view of things. It's not an elitism thing. It's called experience. And we ought to utilize it. And Zig Ziglar says, if you have 20 years experience, that's a good thing, but don't have 1 year's experience 20 times. That's starting over at the floor every time. I'll never start back down there running again. Even if I quit running and get fat or something, my mind can take me back there really quick because I've been there, done that. There's no question of if I can do it. It's only how ugly it'll be. That's the only question. So that's the process. Sure.
Well, there it is. There's how people do high performance achievement. Let's recap in case you missed the bullet points in the outline. Number one, establish a big, hairy, audacious goal, a BHAG, something that's a little out of reach. Number two, plan out the incremental steps, the details that will allow you to accomplish your big, hairy, audacious goal. Number three, find people who have accomplished the same or similar goals and find out how they did it. Study the experts. Number four, heed the warnings from the experts, but don't let those become negatives. Number five, decide on what you're willing to sacrifice to hit high performance achievement. Number six, keep away from negative people and get around positive influences. Speak into people's lives and get people that you want speaking into your life around you. Number seven, visualize your plan in your mind repeatedly. Every piece of detail that you've laid out, you need to see that happening. You need to walk through that in your mind over and over and over again and make it a matter of prayer for that matter. And then number eight, when you do win, by the way, finishing is winning. When you do win, celebrate. Enjoy the fact that you are now a high performance achiever. And a reminder, there's a lot of running talk, a lot of marathon talk all through this discussion that we just had, but there is tremendous overlay into every possible area of your life, your career, your financial, your physical, your relational with your kids, your wife, your husband, and even your spiritual walk and your emotional walk. You can be a high-performance achiever in any of these areas. You just have to decide to do the things that I did to run that marathon and that I've done in many areas of my life, and it's caused me to be able to win. I'm not necessarily brighter or more energetic or prettier than anybody else. I just follow these eight things, and I do them over and over and over again in my life. And it causes me to be able to do things that I step back and go, wow, that is a serious God thing that just happened there. I get to moving on something. I get to participate in something that God is causing to happen. And that is when real high-performance achievement happens. So again, thanks for listening in. What you heard was a teaching I did to my team. This was something we never put together to sell as a product initially, but it's been so popular that we wanted to put out there where everybody could get this information because it is so life-changing. Do set that goal. Do devise a plan to reach it. Do get after it with reckless abandon. Do be the encourager. Do surround yourself with encouraging people. It is worth it. You will experience high performance achievement. By the way, as my last thought, before I leave you, you need to understand that all leaders are readers. People who win, high performance achievers, are always readers, especially in the area of business and leadership. If you want to know some of the books that I recommend that I didn't write, go to our website at DaveRamsey.com and look for our recommended reading and be sure you become a reader. And for more information on anything, whether it's money stuff or just growing as a human being, be sure you check out more at DaveRamsey.com. Thanks for listening.